Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Thursday, February the 25th. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about the schools opening, Governor Cuomo's problems, and really the double standard, the incredible double standard that you're seeing from the media and from the feminists. I mean, are you surprised? I guess you shouldn't be. But anyway, we're also going to remember George Harrison, who was born on this day in 1943. But I want to begin with a story, actually a couple of breaking stories here this evening. Apparently there was a military strike in Syria, very targeted. One place, I guess, that was bombed by U.S. planes. We don't have a lot of information about it, but apparently it's retaliation for the attacks on the U.S. embassy. So I think, you know, when you look at this, it seems to me like a perfectly reasonable action. Again, I don't know much about it, but I'm going to give President Biden the benefit of the doubt on this until we learn more about it. The other story, though, which I think is even more consequential, is that you may have heard that the Democrats wanted to put the minimum wage as part of the COVID program or the COVID bill that they're trying to pass. And they were going to do it through reconciliation, meaning they didn't have to have 60 votes to do it in the Senate. Reconciliation simply means you just have a majority, because reconciliation was created as a way of getting around the 60 votes so that you could pass the budget. Basically, that's what it was. Not a bad idea, frankly, to have reconciliation or that idea, or that, let's say, that method of doing things. So the Democrats wanted to put the minimum wage to $15 in that COVID bill and then pass it through reconciliation, meaning that all they needed was 50 Democrats and then the vice president would break the tie. Well, it turns out that the Senate parliamentarian, just came out and said, no, you cannot do that through reconciliation. You cannot do the minimum wage through reconciliation. Well, that's a big blow. I mean, that is a huge blow to Bernie Sanders, Senator Sanders, and really to President Biden, because now he's going to have to deal with this angry left that is going to come back at him for more minimum wage. He was hoping he could get it through this and then just get it over with. But no, that's not the way it's going to work. So there's not going to be a $15 minimum wage. Now, really, I think that makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, forget the parliamentarian. Just the idea of increasing the minimum wage at this time in the economy when you have restaurants literally living from, as I like to say, literally living from day to day. I mean, you go to some of these restaurants, and here in Dallas, we're doing better than many places. But you go to these places and you talk to the owners and you can tell these guys are literally just paying their bills day to day. I mean, it's not easy right now having a small business in this environment. And then telling these restaurant owners or these small business owners, by the way, we're gonna make you pay a $15 minimum wage. I mean, that would be really the nail in the coffin for most of them. So economically, it does not make any sense to raise the minimum wage right now. And I guess the Democrats are not going to be able to do it through reconciliation anyway, which is what they wanted to do. So let's, I think that's good news. I'm not against increasing the minimum wage. Don't misunderstand me. But I think the minimum wage should be really settled at the local level, at the state levels. And frankly, businesses should do this on their own. I mean, if you want to pay a minimum wage and you can afford to do a $15 an hour minimum wage, go right ahead and do it. Nobody's stopping you from doing it. But the idea that you're going to force a lot of small businesses to do it, that's what my problem is. So there's not going to be a minimum wage in the COVID bill, and that is bad news for the Democrats, to say the least. Let's talk a little bit about the schools. There's a great article today in the New York Times by a fellow named Nicholas Kristof. And I've got a post about this coming out Friday, where he basically came out and said, the idea of closing the schools had nothing to do with science. It was all about hating Trump or being anti-Trump. And of course, as you remember from our history here, recent history, President Trump was in favor of opening the schools fairly quickly. And the teachers' union, I think just to go against him, decided not to do it. But a lot of places around the country, the schools are open. In most of the red states, most of the Republican states, the schools are open. The private schools are open. The Catholic schools in particular are open. So the fact is that people, you know, kids are getting their education in schools, except in many of these Democrat cities like Chicago, New York, Los Angeles, and so on, where the teachers' union is basically telling the mayor and the local leadership what to do with the schools. So I think we've come to the point right now when you have Nicholas Kristof, a liberal columnist, basically saying, look, this has nothing to do with science, and we're hurting the kids by keeping them away from school. I think we may have reached the point right now where opening the schools has to happen very soon. And if the teachers' union don't want to do it or don't want to support it, then let the parents decide where to send their kids. Give them the choice so they can decide where to send their kids. If the teachers, you know, public teachers don't want to teach, that's fine. Nobody's going to force them to teach. But don't force the parents into the situation that they've been put in, where many of these kids are at home. They're not learning. You're already seeing the results in grades. And overall, many of these kids are being held back by learning at home. So it's time to open up the schools. And just like the Catholic schools have done it, just like the private schools have done it, it's time to open up the schools, and we'll see what happens. I guess most of the kids are going to be fine. Most of the teachers are going to be fine. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be right back. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas. A couple of other stories before we get to George Harrison. Have you noticed the double standard? And maybe it shouldn't be a shock to all of us, but the way that, you know, apparently some women are accusing Governor Cuomo of New York of, bad behavior. Let's just say bad behavior. And, you know, I don't know if the women are telling the truth or not. I have no idea. I don't know. I mean, Governor Cuomo is entitled to the same due process as anybody else who's accused. But just look at, compare the way he's being protected by the media and by the feminists, let's say, with what was done to Judge Kavanaugh when he was being presented to the Supreme Court. I mean, it is outrageous when you see the way the two are being covered by the media. Nothing is being said about Cuomo. And with Kavanaugh, every accusation was given total credibility. So, you know, I think the media is hurting itself a lot when it does things like this. And if you're wondering why more and more Americans are tuning out, I think you can tell why. Because it's so obvious, the double standard here. It's just so obvious that it's really sickening. That's all I can tell you. Well, another story this week is that President Trump is going to have to present, I guess he's already done so, his tax returns to the state of New York. Not exactly sure what they're looking for. I don't know. I mean, Trump has been doing business in the state of New York for 50 years, his father before. I'm sure he's been audited 100 times because, you know, very often big people like that are audited a lot. He has major international accounting firms and law firms that prepare these tax returns. It's not like Trump is himself sitting there with a calculator doing this. So I'm not exactly sure what they're going to find. My guess is they're not going to find anything. They're not going to find anything because, as I said, these tax returns are done by professionals in the accounting firms and law firms and all of that. I think this is nothing but just a way of squeezing a little bit more juice out of the Trump orange, if I could put it that way. I just think the Democrats, you know, for five years they lived on the Trump nicotine. You know, like the guy who smokes three packs a day, for 5 years they had this Trump nicotine they were consuming every day. And now with Trump out of the picture, what are they going to do? So I guess they're going to look at his tax returns. What are they going to find? I have no idea, but I doubt very much. I would be very surprised if they find something illegal in tax returns that have been prepared by, you know, accounting firms and law firms, prestigious law firms and accounting firms. I just have a hard time believing that they're going to find anything. But again, they're addicted to Trump, as I said a minute ago. These people are totally, completely addicted to Trump, and they just cannot stop talking about Trump. They simply cannot have. They got to have Trump for breakfast, for lunch, for dinner, and so on. And that's what really this is all about. Well, let's remember George Harrison, who was born on this day in 1943. Of course, George, one of the Beatles. George died in 2001 at the age of 58. He died of cancer. I believe it was lung cancer that hit him very hard there in 2001. George, of course, is one of the original Beatles. John, Paul, and George were three, were together from the very beginning. Now, there was also Pete Best, who was the drummer, and there was another guy named Stu, who was not actually, he was a part of the group, but he was never really a musician. But anyway, he was a part of the group. He died very young, so he was never really a consequential player in the group. And Pete Best was eventually replaced by Ringo right before they recorded their first studio session. So it was George, it was John, and it was Paul from the very beginning, and I think there was a very special relationship between those three. George was a little younger, I think he was a year and a half younger than Paul, and I think he was about 3 years younger than John. And, you know, we all remember George. I mean, he literally turned 21 when the Beatles were touring the United States for the first time, when they were on the Ed Sullivan Show back then in February of 1964. And, you know, he was known as the quiet Beatle, you know, the one who was always in the background. And, of course, I mean, when you play the guitar in a band led by John Lennon and Paul McCartney, of course you're going to be in the background. I mean, that's just the way it goes. And then after they became famous, Ringo took over, and he became even bigger than George, because, you know, Ringo had this crazy personality that I think the media and the fans just loved, you know. So George was always in the background. He would do one song in every album. Those of you who are Beatles fans remember that. And that's kind of the way it was for a long time. And then I think he came into his own with the Beatles in the White Album with that song, While My Guitar Gently Weeps. And, of course, Abbey Road, when he recorded Something and Here Comes the Sun, probably his two biggest compositions as a member of the Beatles. After the Beatles broke up in 1970, George went on his own, and he became the first Beatle, actually, to have a number one song, you know, My Sweet Lord. But that was, again, that was the peak of his solo career. It began to go after that. He never had enough material to hang around for a long time as a solo artist. And by the mid-70s, he was pretty much out of the radio. He came back in 1980 when John Lennon was killed, and he recorded that song all those years ago. But again, in the 80s, he didn't enjoy a lot of success as a songwriter or as a performer. He had a fan base, obviously, that would buy his albums, but it was never the same, never quite the same as it was with the Beatles. But George was a great guitar player. There's no question about that. He was a great guitar player, and many of the great guitar riffs from the Beatles songs were played by George. So he was a great guitar player, and he contributed to the group that way, as well as some other songs that he wrote. So we remember George, the quiet Beatle, Harrison, on this day. He was born in 1943. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later.